Hello and welcome to All About Brahmakumaris. My name is Magla Pillay. I come from South Africa and it is my pleasure today to welcome in the studio Sister Jayanti. The Brahmakumaris World Spiritual University was founded in India in somewhere around 1936, and the purpose of this show is to answer previously unasked questions regarding what the Brahmakumaris does, why it exists, and what are some of its activities. Sister Jayanti, I'd like to introduce her to you. Sister Jayanti has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with the Brahmakumaris and the Middle East with a wealth of spiritual experience as well as global travel on her curriculum vitae. So Sister Jayanti, a very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Today's topic is specifically about Shivaratri. Sister Jayanti, would you please tell us why the Brahmakumaris gives such importance to the festival of Shivaratri?
For us, maybe it's the most significant festival out of all the festivals that come in the whole calendar, because it commemorates the descent of Shiva on earth at a time when there's night, darkness, the Ratri. And at such a time, God the Supreme comes to dispel the darkness and bring about light, the day. And so we believe that this is that period when there is darkness in the world, and God's descent is so important and necessary to be able to remove the darkness of ignorance and bring about the day in which there is light, there is truth, there is love. And so you believe that this particular festival is a very significant one, and it's the one that is actually something that we're experiencing in reality today, that God is actually dispelling the darkness through knowledge, through wisdom, the truth.
What would you say is the relationship between the Brahmakumaris and Shiva? Because there are people all across the globe who celebrate Shivaratri.
Our understanding is that the word Shiva itself is very significant. And the word Shiva tells us many things about God, who He is, what He is, and what He does. Because the word Shiva itself, when it's translated, it means the seed. So indicating that Shiva, God, is the creator. The point, telling us about the form of God, that God doesn't have a pervasive form of energy or a nothingness, but God is actually a being of light, a point of light, infinitesimal, a form that exists eternally without any change. And thirdly, the word Shiva also means the benefactor, and so it's telling us about the act of God. And so the Brahmakumaris very deeply hold this awareness that Shiva, the Supreme, the Mother, the Father of all humanity, is the one who is actually now, at this point now, telling us how to be able to transform ourselves, and is carrying out that task of upliftment.
There are people all across the globe who have consider themselves to be belong to God, and by that I mean they worship Him, they revere Him, communicate with Him in different ways. How is it that it's taught differently by the Brahmakumaris?
On one side there's a lot of love for God, but on the other side there seems to be a lot of confusion about exactly who God is, or even where He is and what actually He does. And so we're very, very lucky that the knowledge that's being shared through the instrument Prajapita Brahma is actually information that is very, very simple and very clear, and seems to answer certainly all the questions that I had. And so it was very easy to understand, and then to practice those ideas in meditation meant that I was able to experience a connection with the Supreme, with Shiva. If you speak to most people who are engaged in devotion, one of the things that they'll probably tell you is that when they try to sit in remembrance of God, it's at that moment that their mind begins to wander here and there, and they feel that they're not able to experience that relationship with the divine. So worshipping God from a distance means I'm a worshipper and I'm here and God is very, very far away. But when there's knowledge, information, and you're able to have a direct connection with God, then yes, Shiva, and we say Shiv Baba, the one who is our personal parent. And so there's a very personal relationship that can come in. And so it's no distance at all. It's an intimate connection.
Mr. Jainti, you mentioned earlier that the form of Shiva is that of light, and he does not have, what you and I have, one of these. And yet you speak of engaging with him, having a relationship with him as a parent. How does one do that on a practical level? Because even with the introduction that you just gave, if you sit to remember God in his formless form, then there would be a certain amount of mental noise. How do you practically achieve what you just said?
When I first came to the Brahma Kumaris, I didn't know myself, and certainly I didn't know God, and I even had a question about whether God actually exists or not. I hadn't dispensed with the idea, but I had this question in my mind. And when I understood that I'm not a physical body, I'm actually a soul residing here in the center of the forehead, I myself, the soul, has taken this physical body, I've taken this form to be able to play my role. But my original form, the form that I can now realize with understanding and meditation, is this form of light, a point of light, an energy that sits just in front of the brain. And from here, I control whatever it is that's going on in my physical body, consciously or unconsciously. And in meditation, what I learned I had to do was I had to detach my consciousness away from my physical identity and the things of the material world. And you can practice doing this, and it happens. It's possible to come to that awareness of just I, this point of light. When I hold this awareness, then I'm able to connect with God, the one who is also without a physical form, without an angelic form or a subtle form, who is just a being of light through my thoughts. When two human beings connect, the words are secondary, but our thoughts connect with each other, and then there's some meaning behind the words that we exchange. But the first connection and the most important connection is through our mind, our thoughts. And so this is exactly what we're doing when we're connecting with God. My eternal form is without a physical body, and the form of God is also without a body. And so it's a connection of the soul with the Supreme through the power of thought, the power of the mind. And you know that it's not your imagination, because as your mind makes contact with the Supreme, what you receive in return from the Supreme is a huge amount of love, of peace, of light, of power.
Mr. Jainti, the world's population is now incredibly large, and as time goes by, irrespective of how many advancements there's been in science, technology, etc., we see God becoming more popular. And what is it within human beings that causes them to look for God and want to have a relationship with God? Because it doesn't make sense that you, for a lot of people who you ask, have you ever met God? And the answer would be no, but I worship him nonetheless for the past 50 years because I want to. What is it? Why is there such a connection and the need for the world over to be in contact with God? Why is that?
It's like if there's a child, then a child will always want to make contact with the parent. And so if, whatever reason there may be, if there isn't that personal connection, the child will go searching for the parent. And in the same way, human souls take whatever it is they can from human beings, but still there's an empty space inside that is unfulfilled, and the soul knows that whatever I get from a human being will always be limited and will always run dry. And if there's something I take from a human being, then there's equally a huge amount that I have to give. And so there's a deep feeling that there's a being out there who knows everything, who possesses all power and all wisdom, all truth. And if I were to reach that being, I'd be able to receive a great deal from that being. And so the soul has this yearning to connect with the divine and experience that unconditional love and the power that can come from the divine.
Sister Jane, we are sitting in front of what is traditionally called the Shivaling or Shivalingam, depending on which part of the world you are. It has symbology attached to it, as you can see. For those listeners who are not familiar with this symbolism, could you explain what this is all about, why it exists, and how is it that God has traditionally been known via this form as opposed to the form that you just described?
The reality of the soul is light. The reality of God is also light. And that light has been remembered universally through all ages as being a representation of God. But it's difficult to remember the light unless you have the whole understanding behind it. And so during our period of search for God, what we did was, when we had a vision of God as light, as many people have done through the ages, that light was then represented in this oval image. And if you have this oval image and you give it a flat base, then you have what you can see, the Shivalingam. So it's actually an external, gross representation of the very, very subtle form of God, so that then it becomes easier to see, easier to remember, but also easy to worship. And in Shiva temples, traditionally, you will find this vessel above, and out of that come drops, slowly, water, milk, they come onto the Shivalingam. And in fact, it's the reminder that from God, the ocean of love, the soul's constantly able to draw from God that love, that purity, that joy, the truth that the soul needs. And so it's like a drop coming onto the soul every moment, so that the soul is transformed through this. But that's then the symbolic representation that's there. And you see the traditional leaf that's offered to God, the bhil leaf. And very often you'll find that the bhil leaf has three leaves rather than just one leaf on its own, but it's clubbed together in three. And it's a reminder of the Trimurti, God in three facets, three phases. The one who's the creator, the one who's the sustainer, and the one who's the transformer. And this is why also you see the three lines. Again, they always appear on the Shivalingam. And so this is the reminder of the work of God. And so this is a little bit about the symbolism behind this. But you can see that when we've been content just simply to be practicing rituals because we've seen the priest do them, or the priest has told us this is what we should do, then it perhaps creates a sacred feeling, and a feeling of the presence of God. But if I actually want to make contact, if I want to connect with God, then I need to go into the significance of the symbols and then use that understanding to be able to make that link, that relationship.
Mr. Jainji, Shiva has been, Lord Shiva actually, has been part of Hindu tradition since time immemorial. Why would you say that the God that you're referring to, or who you describe as being universal, is the same God that all religions aspire to? What makes him so universal as opposed to the one that's traditionally belonged to only one faith that we have on earth?
If I look around the different traditions, where there is an awareness of God, in some there isn't, But wherever there is an awareness of God, light has been the symbol for God. And as I described to you a minute ago, that light has then been represented as the Shivaling. For me, when we say God is the Mother and Father, it means that there cannot be any human form. Can't be Mother and Father together. But this being of light has the attributes of the Mother, the one who's able to give unconditional love, the Father, who has an inheritance, a property to give to the child, the property of happiness. And so all the qualifications or the descriptions that we give of God very much fit with this idea of God as light. And I don't think there is any other being who has been remembered across the world through all ages in this way. So I think that the word Shiva is specific, which I explained earlier, but even if I don't think about a name in that sense, but I think about the attribute of God as being the benefactor, then again, the one who's able to uplift the whole of humanity, give benefit to each and every soul personally, but also together as a family. And so I think that out of all the images of the deities that we have, or the prophets, or the holy fathers, or elevated souls who've come to try and show us the path, but it's actually this being of light who is the supreme soul and is loved and remembered everywhere.
Sister Jane, if you look at what the world has become, irrespective of people's various relationship with God, whatever they may call him, people are experiencing an enormous amount of sorrow. And the question that many people have, if God does exist, why is he not doing something to help his children? What would be your response to that?
God has given us a very clear explanation about what happens in terms of souls and their role, and how the law of karma, the law of action and reaction, cause and effect, applies in the context of souls, and what specifically is the role of God. And so God's role is to come and share with us insight, knowledge, wisdom, so that we can understand the depth of the philosophy of karma and understand ourselves and understand the Creator also. And God's role is also to give us the power of purification, so that where, for example, there are habits that I have that cause me grief and also make me cause sorrow to others, God is able to give me the power to be able to transform those. And so two things: God gives us knowledge and God gives us power. And on the basis of this, souls are able to transform themselves so that their actions don't cause sorrow to others or to the self. In a situation where we lack that knowledge and we lack that power, what's happened is that our own actions have been causing us pain. So it's not God who's causing sorrow, but it's human souls working with old habits and predispositions, that personality traits, that are actually causing themselves sorrow and pain. It's like, you know, if a parent tells a child, this is fire, don't put your hand in it. But if the child still ignores that and puts their hand into the fire, it's not the parent who said, okay, I'm going to tell the fire to cause you pain. But because the child has not understood, then the child does that, and then of course the pain is a big, big lesson never to do it again. And so God teaches us, what are the laws of cause and effect? If you do this, what will be the consequence of that? And if you do this, what will be the result and outcome of that? So God explains to us that, of course, human beings being what they are, sometimes we know, and yet there's an impetus within us that still makes us do things that we know to be wrong, which is indicating that we lack the power to be able to discipline our thoughts and our feelings and channel our energy in the right direction. So God gives us that power also, so that not only do I understand the difference between right and wrong, but God also gives me the strength to be able to withstand all other influences and make sure I only do that which is right and nothing else.
You mentioned a few names and titles of God earlier, and one of the things that you called him is a creator. That causes a lot of confusion with people because, well, you already exist because you can look at yourself in the mirror, and yet God is universally known amongst most religions on the planet as the creator. How is he the creator if you already exist and the soul is eternal?
The festival of Shivratri is a very sweet reminder of that, that the world exists, but when a time comes when there is darkness, then Shiva descends to be able to remove the darkness and make things shift so that then the day comes, so that God comes and creates a world of happiness, not out of nothing or out of dust, but a human world in which human beings are caught up in the bondage of sorrow and are continually causing sorrow to others. God comes and reshapes us, remolds us, and makes us come to a state of purification and purity where our actions can then bring happiness to ourselves and others. And so the task of creation is maybe recreation, rather than beginning with nothing, for there is something there, and it's reshaped, it's refashioned, like a jeweler doesn't make the material gold. The gold exists, but yet the jeweler is still a creator, because he takes that gold and he shapes it and fashions it into something that's very, very beautiful. And so God does the same for us.
Just, Jainji, you earlier we used the word Shivaratri, but in certain parts of India the word Shiv Jayanti is also used. How is that significant in this festival?
We use both words, in fact. So the Ratri indicates the descent of God in the night, but Jayanti is the word for anniversary. And so God comes on earth and we honor that anniversary of his coming with this particular festival. And so a time now, for example, when there's darkness, we are seeing how the light of knowledge is able to remove that. And as the darkness is dispelled and we're able to see clearly what it is we need to do, together with God's love and power, we're able to be helpers of God and start creating again a better world.
We've come almost to the end of today's interview. You speak of God in very personal terms, and what's obvious to me is that whilst the entire world is searching for God, worshipping God desperately, hoping God will bring a miracle into their lives, you speak of God as if his or she is right here. What message do you have for the many who are listening to you right now, who have a lot of sorrow in their hearts and who've lost hope and who really need to know something about God? What can you tell them that they do not already know?
I would say to them that it's very, very simple to be able to experience God, because not only am I remembering God, but I believe God is remembering me too. Because not just the child, having been separated from the parent, is searching for the parent, but the parent is searching for the child too. And so all you have to do is come back here, come back to the awareness of the soul, and let your mind become quiet. And think of God, that being of light, the ocean of love, the ocean of peace, the ocean of purity, the ocean of joy. And if you let your thoughts go towards God, you'll find God, the magnet, drawing you towards him, and you'll be able to feel God's love.
Thank you. I believe that is all we have time for today. Thank you, Sister Jainty, for a wonderful half an hour. I hope those of you listening to today's show have learned something about God. And viewers, thank you for joining us. And I hope wherever you may be in the world, this program was of some value to you. And irrespective of where you stand now, in respect of your relationship to God, I hope that you include Him in your life. Thank you, and goodbye.